It's time for Mac Break Weekly. So much to talk about. Of course, the big story, Mark Gurman's scoop that Apple might be abandoning Intel in a couple of years. The panel has their thoughts on what a future would look like without Intel in the Apple camp. We'll also talk about the new iPad. Renee and Andy both have their hands-on review. It's all coming up next. Oh, and iOS 11.3, brand new. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 604, recorded Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. Intel Outside. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/MacBreak. And by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers. For $75 off your first order, visit Molecule.com and enter the promo code MacBreak. And by Wink, the best way to discover new wines you'll love. Go to TryWink.com/MacBreak and get $20 off your first shipment. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news with Apple journalists like Andy Iannocco from the fabulous Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. A well-known evening paper in the galaxy Orion. Hello, Andrew.
Thank you very much. We've added morning delivery, afternoon delivery. We don't even care if you're on the toilet. We'll still serve you.
Everywhere you are.
Hot, fresh slices whenever you want.
Great to have you, Andy. Renee Ritchie's joining us from, oddly enough, not from Montreal, but from San Francisco. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. Yeah, last-minute travel. I'm hosting a party at the AT&T store about distracted driving awareness.
Did you go home from Chicago and then come back to San Francisco?
Yes. It was unexpected. I was supposed to do this party while I was, and then I had to go to Chicago, so they delayed the party, and now we're doing it this week. So.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. Well, it's a good cause.
Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you so much. The wrong part of it, sadly.
We're not that close. It's okay. And joining us right next to me, oddly enough, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Hello, Alex.
Hi. And I have a new show.
What's your new show?
It's called The Teardown. You'll love it.
Ooh, it sounds like you're breaking
things apart. It's on YouTube. It's on our YouTube channel. It is... I look at other people's broadcasts and I tear them down. Yep, I pick at them.
Oh my God, that's
with a telestrator.
That's bold of you.
Yes.
With a telestrator.
Yeah.
You know, I think so, that might be an occupational hazard. I was at the barbershop yesterday.
I'm not messing around. I just went straight for CNN.
You went to the CNN.
Yeah,
I was at the barbershop yesterday and we were watching ESPN and I said, Lisa, that's a very poor green screen, and I was showing her what was wrong with the key that they were using.
Right.
Because they were at a desk. Boy, I want to be on your show. They were at a desk. And, right. You know, you could have a real desk. But nowadays, you key the background. Okay, I expect that. But they also key the desk. So they have some generic white desk.
Right.
And they key
horrible.
The whole thing. But the reason it was a dead giveaway is they had this supposedly reflection of them going all the way down the front of the desk. And I said, what angle
would that work?
Would that work where you see his head here and then down there, reflection of his head?
Right.
That is, it's even looking at it, it bugs me. It's nonsensical, but I guess they think it's slick.
Well,
right?
You know, and
what are you doing? Is that the kind of thing you're doing?
Yeah. So if you jump in it a little bit more, this is, I picked at this.
I have the problems playing back video. You're picking. Oh, look at this.
I explained why they were having trouble with that, why that render isn't good.
This is great stuff.
And I broke it. I break down like they're not, the polygons aren't well formed and, you know. and I was like, the only way to fix this is
that
if
is
you
ugly.
Go back and refix it. And then, you know, and then I talked here about mic placement. And then the second one I do, I just talked about insert studios because insert studios drive me crazy.
What's an insert studio?
An insert studio is, I actually explain it in the show, but the insert studio is what everybody you see on CNN is in an insert studio, like when they're talking heads. They're in a studio that sitting. Basically, when I come into MacBreak from I'm in our insert studio. And so I show a picture of our insert studio, but then I start going from one insert studio to another and talking about the bad key, the background, and the ones that are good. I'm not just attacking things. I'm, you know, pointing out like this works or this doesn't work or, you know, that kind of thing. So
I would imagine that this would be must-see TV for the folks, the engineers at CNN and everywhere else, right?
I think
unless they're offended.
They might be offended.
Producers were offended.
It's pretty rough, and I have to admit, after the first two, I'm starting to get my stride.
Insert studio.
Yeah, so I'm just talking.
So is this going to be like Mystery Science Theater 3000 with like a silhouette of you, like just making fun of like flyaway hairs that aren't being
Give
managed?
The man a telestrator. That's an insert studio.
That's my insert. Yeah. That's our insert studio.
That's what you're looking at when you're joining us with the green screen behind it.
And then I'm just explaining the keys and the, you know, like what they're, you know, how they're doing each one of these.
So she's not in front of an actual.
I think she's in front of a screen. I'm sorry. She's in front of a.
A window?
A green screen, I think.
Yeah,
It's actually a pretty good key.
That's a good key.
The problem really there was exposure, which I was talking about.
Yeah,
there
she's way dark. Yeah.
She's dark because that feed is really, really bright, and it's just really hard to properly
She's getting
expose.
Blown out by the...
And then this one I was talking about, the headroom, which is a little much. And the fact
God,
that...
I hope you never do our shows.
There's aliasing that's going down behind her, which is either a scrim that's too close or a monitor. Oh, and I was talking a little bit about
that. Bad lower thirds.
Yeah, and
you're hysterical.
You can see the scrim there, right? There's like a little texture there.
Yeah.
And she's too close to the scrim, so it's not outside of the depth of field. And so I'm explaining like what happened and how to fix it.
At this point, I'd like to point out that I really am still setting up everything in this new studio. This background is going to be way further
back. See that glare behind
back.
Andrew there lights, over his right
the
shoulder?
The lights aren't nearly as well set up as I'm going to have them.
Well, I call it the teardown. I was like, am I too rough?
That's a good name.
Someone in the office said you should call it the Grim Reaper.
I'm here.
But there's Just make sure people know you're talking about tear down people's self-esteem, their pride in their work. Yeah.
And
their
there's definitely ones. I was working on one last night that I'm going to post later this week, and I looked at the Al Jazeera set, and it's all I'm talking about is how much I love it because it looks like a spaceship and it's got all this great stuff. But I explained what all the things are too. So it's not just tearing something down; it's also like
let's look at this Bloomberg set. By the way, this is a perfect example of I'm going to go back a little bit of one of those fake keyed sets like that desk. I can't stop it, unfortunately. But the desk they're behind is obviously a fake desk, the whole thing. What they're talking about, though, is of great interest to us. This is Mark Gurman's scoop. Apple plans to use its own chips in Macintosh.
Are we surprised?
No, I guess this all makes sense.
Well, yes, and
it's been rumored since 2011.
Yeah. But this is still a rumor. We should point out this is not a new, this is maybe a more confirmed rumor. And I think it does make sense now. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense for a lot of reasons. Apple obviously likes control. They're frustrated with Intel's schedule. They can't blame Intel for the lack of real updates for the Mac in forever. But they would also allow them to integrate everything together a lot better. The reason why you get so much performance out of the iPad isn't necessarily just because of their A10X processor, but because of how well and tightly integrated it is with the operating system, the rest of the hardware, everything else. The only thing I disagree with, I don't think that Apple would plan to transition the entire Mac line over to their own designs, unless they've got the mojo to design something better than the ARM platform, because I just don't see them spinning up enough experience to make something that could power an iMac Pro, something that could, you know, do film editing, something that could do special effects, machine learning models, VR, stuff like that. So I've actually just wrote something that's going to hope that might even be up on Fast Company later today or right now. I filed it early this morning. That basically made the idea that either they'll use this, that the biggest impact is going to be on the consumer level Macs, like the MacBook Air, like the MacBook Nothing, because It doesn't have a whole lot of demands. It can benefit the most from custom CPUs. It could even cut the price down so that they could finally start making some form of Macintosh notebook for less than $900 or $800. Or if this is the way of sort of nudging the Macintosh out of the world and start getting people to transition from macOS to iOS by making the next version of macOS something that is a lot more like iOS rather than cross-pollinating the two, which is something we've been talking about for a while.
So I just I think we should really look at this Bloomberg set here, Alex. Would you like to take the pen and comment on it? That's clearly a fake desk. It's got a lot of gloss on it. You think that's real?
I think it's a real desk, but I think that the problem that you usually get into with this stuff here is that
shall I zoom in? Let me zoom. Oh, you need a Surface Studio to do this.
Mine's actually. I'm pretty. My setup's pretty.
You got a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not surprised. No. Enough. Yeah. You go watch Alex's thing. Yeah. I don't want to. This is Mac Break Weekly. We got actual Apple news here. Let's talk about. What is the reason, Renee, that Apple? First of all, why is this such a credible rumor? The stock market believes it. Tanked Intel stock. Significantly.
Stock market's ridiculous because Apple's 5% of Intel's business, and even if they moved off, and Neil Patel made this point yesterday, even if they moved off the Intel platform, they're not going to make chips for anybody else. Everyone else will still be buying Intel. So that's right. Just emotional, right. Typical stock market stuff. But so I think past is prologue here, and what we saw with Marklar, which was the Intel transition, they named it after the alien species from South Park, which I still love to this day. They had the Intel Macs running in the closet, like in the lab, for a long time because they had to, they had to get macOS ported, they had to get Safari ported, they had to get all the major stuff ported. And they were just there in case at some point they made the decision that based on PowerPC's roadmap, they needed to change direction. And that happened. And Jeff McLaren reminded me this morning that PA Semi was all set to start making PowerPC chips for the Mac when Steve Jobs changed his mind and went Intel and then later bought PA Semi. And that entire team became the Apple A-Series team that makes the chips now. And the iPhones and iPads.
Those are ARM platform based chips. Would the Mac
power
chip,
arm, yeah.
Power arm, because it's a little power, yeah. A little bit of power, a little bit of ARM. Would they be using that same chip family for Macintosh as well? And then what would that mean for Mac OS?
So I think in general, I mean they've had Mac arms, they had Mac running on ARM for years. People have had it in the closet because you have to be ready. And Intel has had an incredibly hard time going to 10 nanometer. They went from their TikTok cycle to TikTok, talk. I mean, every 3 minutes I turn around and they're announcing an interim architecture change.
They just announced another one this morning.
Another one, yeah. Yeah. And their roadmap right now is probably every bit as dicey to Apple as PowerPCs was when they made that transition. So that has to be ready to go. And Apple let an intern do some of the porting and he published his paper years ago about getting Mac to run ARM.
But I have so many to say, unknowns. I am running Windows on ARM right now, and it is not a pleasant experience because it only does right now Windows 32-bit, and it runs like a dog on a Snapdragon 835. But one of the advantages Apple would have designing its own silicon is they could make – I presume they could make it be more responsive.
Do several things. Like we saw last year and this year, like Samsung is probably one of the best fabs in the world, and they're a generation or two generations behind what Apple's doing with silicon. Like the right. A-series chip are just best in industry now. But also, Apple has had years to make Mac run well on ARM. They've also had years to make specific ARM chips to run Mac, if that's what they want to do. There's always a potential they could somehow get AMD to make x86 or license x86 chips to them to make their own custom x86 chips. There's hybrid solutions like they're doing now with some part of it run with an ARM chip and some part of it run with x86. And there's also, like they did previously, interpreters, which aren't great either and usually impact the same high-performance software. That's the only reason you want the x86.
So you're saying then that this doesn't anyway necessarily mean the end of Mac OS.
Oh, not at all.
But I look at this and I worry that that's what is going on here. Now, we've talked before about marzipan, which besides being a lovely almond treat, is the kind of unified software platform that would allow iPhone, iPads, iOS stuff to run on Macs, right?
It would share the logic. Yeah, sorry.
Is that a related?
technology? I think it's like when you see like Apple announced size classes and there was no real reason to announce them. And then you got bigger iPads, side-by-side apps and bigger iPhones. You know, so you've always looked to what Apple's going to announce. And it might be Marzipan. It might be something that does similar. But the idea there is just because there's so much iOS stuff, like people are complaining there won't be any games on Mac. If you can run iOS games on the Mac, you've solved the problem for 80% of the gaming market. And I don't think Apple would do this transition without being carefully planned.
Well, and interestingly, both Fortnite and PUBG, which are big PC games, running on iOS right now. And by the way, running really nicely on iOS.
Yeah. Well, and I think that one of the things that one of the advantages this gives Apple is that, you know, you have Intel making chips that have to cater to everybody, Apple being a small percentage of that everybody. You have Windows being
Apple doesn't like that. They don't like to be 5% of a market.
Exactly. And then you have Windows, which is written for lots of different platforms. And so both of them are kind of generalized. They're not specialized to what Apple necessarily wants. So by controlling their own chipsets, and I think that they will start with the consumer ones and eventually move towards professional.
Steve Jobs always said, you got to make hardware and software.
Well, and the more they make their own hardware and the more they make their own software, number one is they're not underwriting everybody else's development. Number two is that they're not, you know, because that's what I mean with Samsung, even the stuff that they buy from Samsung. I'm not saying they're doing it immediately, but I think that Apple, there's this slow churning of Apple wanting to take over most of the key components
like to get
of
everybody
their,
out of that.
Yeah, and maybe they still have Foxconn assemble it.
Well, but they also, I don't think Apple wants to make accelerometers or. I mean,
it's the same thing that everybody wants. You basically want to control the things that make you different. You want to commoditize the things that don't make you different, that are kind of done. So commoditize all those things. And but like, for instance, I think that eventually Apple will want to do its own displays because that makes them different.
Well, and that's another rumor we've talked about already, which is that they have a fairly advanced R&D project working on this new micro LED technology that Samsung showed at CES.
Right.
And Apple apparently has a 35,000 square foot factory down in Cupertino or Sunnyvale where they're
you can imagine them starting with a watch for something like this, but eventually moving to their phones. And again, if Apple's able to build all of those things, they have a unique advantage as far as how fast they can innovate.
Innovating Intel, right? So we're seeing that already. They also solves their supply. There also solves the supply chain problems, right? Because they're just
and
in
leaks.
Time and leaks.
And
Andy, you don't think it's a good idea?
They're teaching Samsung how to do things that Samsung then uses on their own phones.
Are you worried about performance, Andy? You think that Apple's not scooping Intel at this point?
I don't think they're outperforming Intel. I think that Intel is in the business of making CPUs. Apple is in the business of making entire pieces of hardware. So those are different opportunities to get not just performance enhancements, but battery enhancements. And Microsoft and Intel, they do work very intimately together to make sure that Intel is building chips that are in line with Microsoft's strategies for Windows. All I'm saying is when I was speaking earlier before, all I was saying is that I don't see Apple being able to dump Intel the way that they were able to dump PowerPC. I mean, it was immediately, it's like a switch was turned. There's going to be an emulation layer, Rosetta, for people who are stuck with old machines, but the future is entirely Intel. I don't think they're in a position to, again, make a workstation class computer with their own chip technology yet. That might change in 5 years, but that's also enough time for Apple to come up with something beyond Macintosh for their future. And as I keep saying, I hope it doesn't sound like a broken record, but it is something that I sincerely believe. Apple just has not shown enough enthusiasm for the Mac to make me take off the table the idea that Apple has an end of life already planned for the Mac. I'm not predicting it. I'm not saying that's already there, but anytime I think about or speculate about the future of the Mac, it has to include the possibility that Apple has already picked a date, it's circled on the calendar, and here's their plan for transitioning all the Mac users either onto iOS or to whatever workstation class computing that they feel comes after macOS.
A guy named Andy Inoko wrote a really interesting article in a Fast Company called The Fifth Age of Macintosh, What Happens If Apple Dumps Intel? And as you point out, only Apple knows what it's planning. But we've said before that as long as you have to use a Mac to write software for iOS, Apple can't kill macOS.
But you see them playing. I mean, I think that Swift Playgrounds is Apple slowly moving towards the process.
This story made me think of that is, if they get everybody writing Swift, then it's a simple switch in the compiler, not that a developer could just recompile and suddenly it's native. I don't even want to say ARM. It's native a processor.
I think if Apple is planning to making any plans that are contingent on getting Mac developers to switch to Swift, I think that is about as likely as them getting into the cookie business.
Really?
I don't think that you're not going to get Apple has enough problems trying to get Mac developers to simply support the APIs that they're requiring them to make. They're getting enough pushback on just getting them to keep their apps on the App Store. I mean,
That's one of the arguments that they kill Mac OS, is that people develop for iOS regardless of what tools or technologies are required because they can make a ton of money on iOS. But if they can't persuade them to use technologies they want them to use on Mac OS, because there's not as much money to be made, then...
There's two separate things there, too, is that one is that it's not just Swift. They can recompile... James Thompson was talking from Peacock, was talking about this in the morning, except for things that are really... down, you know, lower levels abstraction.
Yeah, it's a switch in Xcode for any project, no matter what you're writing.
Absolutely.
It in.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if they do project like Marzipan, then they have a wealth of iOS apps that they would need completely new interfaces, but they would still have all the logic and all the data models and everything that's much easier to bring to the Mac.
Well, and also iOS, like for Mac developers, the thing is when the iOS apps suddenly become available on the Mac, there's a whole new layer of competition, you know, from those pieces. And the thing to look at is how do we convert developers over the next year or two? It's how do we, you know, they're working obviously based on last week from high school, you know, from grade school to have people learning how to write Swift. You know, that's a 10-year plan to move a certain kind of programmer, you know, to a point where they're generating revenue on the platform.
There's another data point in this, which is that even Microsoft seems to be moving away from Windows. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons Intel's stock took such a hit is that there was also a story that week that Terry Myerson, who's run Windows at Microsoft for almost a decade, is out. He's not even working at the company anymore. And that Microsoft, what was the headline? It was a great headline I read somewhere. Microsoft is effectively demoting Windows and saying services are our future. And if that's the case, then they just as soon develop for Macintosh or iOS, whatever the platform is. And in fact, that's exactly what Microsoft has done. They make really good iOS stuff.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I mean, the first thing that when Steve Ballmer left, the very first thing that was that the new CEO did was take office for Mac for the cloud, for the iPad, and immediately take it from something they've got in their back pocket to something they put in the front burner. The thing about that reorganization is that yes, they did sort of demote Windows status from sort of a secretary cabinet level position to a part of a larger box. But the thing is, as far as I know, they haven't let go a lot of engineers from the Windows team, which means that I don't think that they think that they're going to need less development for Windows. I think the problem is, and this is very, very relevant for Apple, is that and this is something that I put in that Fast Company article. The model of screen, keyboard, pointing device isn't going anywhere. No one has come up with anything that can do this thing that only this model can do, and continues to be important. The effect that's taking place now, though, is that all the stuff that you don't necessarily need a notebook for or a desktop for is being bled off by tablets and by phones. So Apple is going to find itself in a position, if that's true, I think that Apple is going to find itself in a position where it's going to be harder and harder to maintain the consumer MacBook market, because people don't need to upgrade nearly as often as they have to, because now you used to buy a new computer because you need more CPU, you need more storage, you need more memory. Now you're essentially renting that off of a server, so that's not quite so important. And now that there are fewer people who are upgrading, fewer people who are necessarily buying, and you're still competing with really, really good Windows machines, this might be a case of my selection bias, I freely admit, but I can imagine Apple thinking that people are buying lots and lots and lots of MacBooks, but they're mostly buying MacBook Pros. I don't think the shipments of MacBook Airs and MacBook Nothings is really, really setting the barn burning. I think that they're thinking about the MacBooks, the consumer level Macs, the same way that they used to think about the iPods, where We're making money with them. It's a good business. However, this isn't going to continue to grow the way that our business would grow if we took those iPod users and moved them onto iOS devices. So that's why I can easily imagine Apple saying, let's figure out a way to take consumer MacBook users and move them onto iOS devices, even if that means making a more powerful version of iOS and making hardware that is a little bit closer to a MacBook than an iPad.
And I think for 90% of the MacBook users, if you gave us, if we had the experience of a keyboard and, things like that, and we had a touchscreen, if you mix those two things together and made it an iOS thing, most of us would use it. I mean,
Apple's going to do?
I think eventually.
Hybrid?
I think we're going to see a hybrid. I think that's how you convert people over. That's how you convert me. I'm not quite ready to, I still,
you haven't moved to Windows yet.
I've not moved to Windows. I still haven't moved up to the. I haven't moved up to the newer Mac.
No, me neither. I'm still like you, using a 15-inch 2015.
But, I mean, there is a real problem with Intel. As much as whether you like the new MacBook Pros or you don't, they shipped really late because Intel just didn't have processors that Apple needed. They've pushed DisplayPort.
But does that explain
behind on DisplayPort?
Does that explain why the Mac Mini hasn't been updated? That's not Intel's fault.
Apple could throw whatever processor they want in there, but with the computers they do want to ship are also delayed because they're totally dependent on Intel's roadmap, and that roadmap has significantly hurt their features. Like, they wanted to have the low power RAM and much higher configurations, and they couldn't. They wanted to have all these things that would have made those computers more powerful and probably gotten them less heat from pro level developers. So, they just simply wasn't ready on time.
So Mark says is as soon as 2020. That's 2 years off. Well, two things. First of all, this is going to be a really interesting May and June, because we're going to have Microsoft's Build conference, where we're going to, I think, get an idea of what Microsoft's seeing as the future. And it may be progressive web apps, which would solve this problem, right? Because those run on anything. Then we're going to see Apple and Google in June. And I think it's going to be
Google does not use Intel. Google's making a ton of computers that do not use Intel.
Right. Well, actually, they make the Pixelbook does use Intel, but you're right. They're investing heavily in silicon now, too.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be, I would be very interesting, and we will cover heavily the keynotes at all three events, and this will be a very interesting couple of events and couple of months where we might get a better insight into how this landscape is changing. It's been changing all along, right? How people use computers. But so now, here's the question I want for all three of you. Let's say it happens in 2020 or 2021. What's that going to look like? Will the iPad still be here? The iPhone will obviously still be here. What will the Mac look like? Go ahead, Renee, you start, and then we'll each of you get a chance. What is it going to look like?
I think the simplest answer is Apple just transitions the entry-level computers, the lower-power computers, the more portable mobile computer line to an ARM-based platform. The MacBook goes ARM. Whether they do Mac OS on ARM.
Do they do a hybrid tablet like the Surface Pro where you have a detachable keyboard, or do they do a standard laptop?
I just made a whole video asking for that, so I'm obviously biased in my wishes. But I think that would be a fantastic product that a lot of people would just love, especially in education and other environments. It's the same strategy they're doing now. You bring the MacBook more towards the iPad, the iPad more towards the MacBook, and those two computers fight it out to be the best possible solution.
Okay. How about you, Alex? What do you expect? 2021, the new world.
I think that between now and then, I agree with Renee that it's going to be consumer. You can start with the basic stuff.
Still need an iMac Pro. You still need a Mac Pro.
I think
you
so. I think there's still a group of people that still need the faster processors. And
how
that's
long
just
is
be
that around for, though?
I think it'd be 5 or 10 years. I mean, I think that there's a lot of work there that I think that is going to be difficult to do with without Intel for a while, because a lot of the code is really written to that hardware, and I think that it's not going to be trivial to move Maya, for instance, or something else over, or big computational stuff. So I think that's going to take some time. I think that in between now and 2020, I think we see this year or next year we see an iPad Pro that, really starts to bridge that. It doesn't. You don't have to put ARM on the base laptop. You can make the iPad Pro a little more powerful. If it really feels like, for instance, if you gave me an iPad Pro where it was easy to use a mouse and it came with a keyboard and I could lock it in and pull it out, I might cut my CPU time into half. It's just that there's this funny thing where it's very inefficient to only use a keyboard and a trackpad. and it's very inefficient to only use your fingers. There's this hybrid that Apple hasn't been able to really, in my opinion, cross very well. Like there's a lot of things like you use OmniGraffle or even Keynote. Those things are just painful on the iPad, in my opinion, because it just trying
even
to make that
frankly,
work.
Frankly, even editing video is easier with touch, to be honest with you, and music. I mean, Logic.
It's hard to be precise.
Okay.
So I find it easier to throw things together, but really hard to have those precise edits that I'm used to. You know, it's just that's where touch isn't as powerful, in my opinion.
Right.
And so I think that there is this hybrid that Apple could do with the iPads before they did anything with the Mac that would get a lot of us just starting to use that a lot more if they just gave us that kind of in between. I think the danger is, of course, is that suddenly you have iPad apps that are really expecting you to have other interfaces, you know, and that's something that Apple doesn't necessarily want other than the pencil.
Yeah, so I mean, this is going to take the early warning system would be developers, because this is going to take a lot of change in development and the way developers think about user interfaces and screens. So we'll get an early warning system. As you pointed out, Renee,
every
you find out about this stuff, you know, with developers first. Andy, what do you think?
I'd be surprised whether it happens in 2020, 2022. I think that what happens is consumer Macs, as we recognize them now, disappear. That iOS sort of expands to become capable of doing the stuff that a MacBook Air or a MacBook Nothing does today. Hopefully, it'll be through an entirely new interface. It would also open up Apple to create really interesting devices like the one that you've got in front of you right now. Like, imagine the analog to an iMac being a 24-inch touchscreen tablet that can be put flat on a desktop or set up like an easel. Just as you say, I do prefer editing video via touch because it's just faster and it's more intuitive. But yet you can also put it put it upright and then have a keyboard and some sort of pointing device with it. And then I think that Mac OS remains as there's a Mac Pro line that has something that is a more conventional windowing mouse pointer-y sort of interface. I can't imagine Apple wanting to get rid of the high ground of creation by sticking totally to consumer level devices. But the thing is, their love is for iOS. They don't hate Mac OS. They don't resent it. They don't want it to die. But that's whether it's the stuff that they actually put into the Apple Store, the stuff they say during keynotes, or just kind of conversations I have with current people who work for Apple and people who have recently left Apple. I feel as though their real love, their real passion is for iOS. And whenever they think about the future of Apple, they're not really thinking. They're thanking the Mac very much for its service, just like you have an employee who's 65, 66, 67 years old. You know that you can probably get another 5 good years out of them, but you may as well cut them loose now and give his office space and his budget to someone who grew up with multi-touch. So that's what I think is going to happen.
I think you're exactly right, Andy, and I don't base it on any logic, but simply on the evidence from Apple. At last week's education event, where they're talking to, you know, young people, this is what we want young people to use. They did not mention Macintosh at all.
Yeah.
If you look at where the money's going, where the R&D's going, where the heart and soul of Apple is going, in every case, follow the money. Well, it's iOS.
I think
all Apple's doing at this point is trying to figure out what's keeping that from happening. And how do we solve it? Number one is development. Yeah. Yeah. And do they care about professionals? Maybe not. I mean, I know they did the iMac Pro, but the Mac Pro is 3 years old. I feel like professionals, they're willing to cut off that group. All they really need to solve is how do we get people to develop for the
I think it would break Apple's heart if the reference platform for developing iOS apps were a Windows machine. I agree.
They need to solve that. But that's where all of their attention is focused right now. What do we do with the Mac? They're saying, how do we get rid of the Mac? How do we solve the pain points of getting rid of the Mac? And probably the only one is, how do we get development moved over? And there's lots of ways to do that that don't necessarily require a desktop computing environment.
All I want to say quickly, and I'll let everyone else get in, is that last week's education event was so significant. Because I think they have a wonderful plan for education. They really landed all their points well. They really addressed the complaints that I've been hearing teachers making. But it's another example, just like the Apple Watch, of here is what Apple can accomplish when they are highly motivated and excited about succeeding in a certain space. This is how big they went, even though their strategy for the iPads and education more or less failed. They can fail as much as any Apple product can. However, rather than leave the market and just sort of let it tail off, they decided, nope, we are going to listen. We're going to make an entirely new generation of software, of lesson plans, of social software, a whole new development system. We're also going to hold our nose, take a good shot of whiskey, and make a fantastic computer that costs $299 or $329. If they were as passionate about, I just feel like if they were as passionate about the Mac, they could have said, you know what, we're going to start making Macs that are really, really inexpensive because we are tired of kids not wanting to. We're tired of seeing kids with Windows machines.
They would counter the Chromebook with something like a Chromebook. They don't believe in the desktop. They believe in touch. They believe in iOS. That's the future.
And in 10 years, we're going to be talking about how they're transitioning from the iPad to the AR, you know, like where it's all virtual and we're not touching any kind of screen. 10 or 15 years. We'll start seeing the transition.
I don't know if I'll be around when that happens.
But I think that they're spending as much money on that as well. And I think the reality is, as someone who is a power user who uses apps that would never run on an iPad right now, I mean, I can see that 80% of my time, though, is still spent in areas that I could use my iPad. Right. The interface isn't quite right.
Well,
you're the
disenfranchised group by this future that we're talking about.
I think that the big thing that Apple could, and I've said this before, that the kick in the teeth that Apple could do on the way out, you know, this is how you leave the house and burn it to the ground, is you get... Once you get everybody over to the iOS, you just open source macOS or make it free, and it would just kind of burn anything that was left behind them. They would just kind of burn it all up. Like, here you guys, you guys can have all of this.
Reached the new world. That's how you leave the house and burn it down. I don't think that's going to happen.
I'll tell you what. I think that there's a couple of issues with that. First of all, there's IP problems with releasing it to open source that are probably intractable.
I don't know about open source, but free. Like, you just let, you know, let
the other issue
open
is
a bunch of the bits.
The security liability. As soon as a company says, okay, it's yours, but they're now not doing security patches for it in this day and age, I think that's a real problem. I would love them to do this,
right?
But I think that they're just tactical issues that are going to keep them from doing it. They're going to bury macOS, and it'll be bye-bye. And frankly, if I were a developer today and looking for a fertile territory that maybe in 5 years, I'd be starting to work on an operating system that could take over for those people. I still think there's going to be a market for desktops. Renee, final thoughts, so we're going to move on.
Yeah, I think, you know, Apple doesn't do everything. I think all of us would like Apple to do everything, right? And Apple can't even do the stuff that they are doing now. Like, right. You looked, Andy's right about the education event, but as much as it was good, we also saw iBooks. We also saw Pages take over for the languishing iBooks author. And we saw the first update to iWorks in years, and they have two dedicated teams on that product. And you go back to the Mac Mini. Apple is already doing so much that it can't keep up with the stuff it's doing. So I think it's going to have to make a lot of hard choices. And they historically do not do things like netbooks, which would be analogous to low-entry Chromebooks. They're going to want to do things that allow them to be as efficient as possible. And I think that is moving to efficient possible and to control the technology that allow them to create differentiated experiences. And I think this makes, when you look at where Intel is now and where PowerPC was then, I think ARM Macs were a stick they hit Intel with for years, and now it's a blade they're just cutting loose with.
Yeah. I think bingo, and I think the real disconnect here is there is what we as users want and hope for, and I think Apple's done exactly what you just described, Renee, which is said, we can't do everything. We don't need to be a computing company. We have a product that is killer. We're very happy. We're one of the most valuable companies in history. We're doing fine. Let's just double down on that. They have mentally cut loose something that we as users are very reluctant to cut loose. And from a business point of view, it makes perfect sense. From a global point of view, it's like, well, who's going to do Mac?
They have a very serious problem coming up, and that is, like, our existing computer model, it's not going to be here forever.
Right.
And there are other companies that are really, like, imagine, like, the iPhone 20 is a marble in your pocket that does local biometric authentication, cloud connectivity, and then takes over any AR or piece of glass screen opportunistically as needed. can Apple deliver that? I mean, they have so much work to do on Siri, on AI, on AR, that investing heavily in what will eventually be a product of the past makes less sense than Apple being Apple and working towards fixing all the things they need to get to where the next hockey puck is going.
Really great conversation. Thank you, everybody. We'll have more in just a bit. Our show today brought to you by the bad news that next week your taxes are due.
Oh. I'm going to say, I love my wife.
Is it in Canada? It's over in Canada, right, Renee? Or
no, it's either April 30th or May 1st.
Well, you get more time. We get less time.
Yeah. But Leo, the taxes hurt more. So
in 2 weeks, your taxes will be done. That's the good news. The bad news is you have to do them in the next 2 weeks. That's why I want to tell you about TurboTax Live, the fastest, easiest, most accurate way to do your taxes. And now, even more confidence that your taxes are correct, because with TurboTax Live, you get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. You can ask as many questions, get as many answers as you need. It's one-way video, so you don't even have to get out of your jammies to do this. It's the new way to get your maximum refund with a professional who works in the field right there on video on your computer. You can even have the expert review your return before you file and make any necessary changes. And by the way, the questions you might want to ask, what about next tax time? What should I be doing now to prepare for a very new world with taxes? And they're up on the new tax law 100%. And of course, as with everything TurboTax does, it's backed with a 100% accuracy guarantee. This is how I do my mom's taxes. I wish I could do our business taxes this way because it costs us an awful lot. Maybe we can now that we got a CPA or EA on the other side of the screen. Connect with a TurboTax Live expert today at TurboTaxLive.com/MacBreak. This is the last piece of the puzzle. TurboTax has always been the easiest, fastest way to do your taxes. And now you get the reassurance of an expert. It is fantastic. I will. You know what? My plan is, because I do my mom's taxes since last year. It's really easy in TurboTax because it imports everything from her Schwab account and everything just automatically. So it makes it so, I mean, it really is 15 minutes to do the whole thing. But then what takes it a long time is mom, bless your soul, calls me and says, well, what about this? What about that? Did you think about this? What about that? And now I can just connect her with a TurboTax expert and say, mom, because she would say things like, I don't trust you. What does Lisa say? Because Lisa is an EA. Lisa knows all about this stuff. What does Lisa say? So now I'm just going to say, well, Mama, hey, here's the good news. We got TurboTax Live. Here's the person. Just talk to her. And I'm done. TurboTaxLive.com/MacBreak for real peace of mind. It's only 2 weeks.
So nice of you, Leo.
I know. She was paying $500 every year. She's got the simplest taxes ever.
Right.
I mean, it's not. I can't do an easy with her. She's got some stuff that makes it a little bit more complicated, but it's so easy with TurboTax.
Very good, son.
Well, I felt, you know, I also took over investments. That's been a little more challenging because she watches, you know, cable news, and every time the market goes down, cable news goes crazy, and she says, "Sell my stocks," and I say, "No, Mom, no. You sell them when they're high, not low. Wait, it's going back up." And then they go back up, and she's, "Oh, okay, you're right." And then, sell my stocks.
Ask Lisa if I should sell my stocks.
Ask Lisa. She really does. She says, ask Lisa.
You kind of need to put a post-it next to the screen saying, do not buy gold or food buckets. Neither are important or necessary.
Yeah, exactly. She's not quite to the point of burying gold in the backyard, but she's doing, by the way, she's doing great.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. Your mom is pretty damn adorable. She's wonderful.
Isn't she a sweetie? Yeah. And she's it's funny because she acts like she's got no money. And she's got a significant nest egg.
That's the secret,
generation.
Leo. That's the secret.
It's the generation.
That generation always thought about
it. Totally the generation. She says, well, I've been buying her food delivery, Uber. You know, she says, well, I can't fix the plumbing. I don't have any money, so I pay for that. And then I see what she's got. It's like, Mom, you should be giving me money. No. I'm glad she has money. That's awesome. So you're telling me my iMac Pro is not going to be obsolete next year?
No.
Tim
Cook is not going to come to your house and take it away.
Do you not love your iMac Pro, Renee? Do you not miss it now that you're on the road? You miss it, don't you?
While people were walking by in the education event, I kept going, iMacBook Pro, iMacBook Pro. I'm too used to it. I need to take it on the road now.
I know. I love my iMac Pro. I really do. Do you own the new 2018 fifth? What is it? Eighth generation? What generation iPad is it now?
Sixth generation. Yes.
We can't.
My review went up yesterday morning.
Tell me about it.
It's really good. I mean, last year the argument was that it was the best tablet for the price, and that's sort of damning with faint praise because no other company has really done much in the pure play tablet space recently. Google's getting into it with Chrome. We'll see what happens, but it's a really good value. And what they've done is they've kept it essentially the same, but they've made two small and two large changes. One is the LTE is now twice as fast if you want that option. Also, the gold is kind of blushy, rosy, coppery gold now, which means that either you love it or you can't match your other gold products. So either way. But the two big changes, one is it's gone to the A10 processor, the A10 Fusion, and that has the high efficiency cores and the high performance cores. And it's about 1.5 times faster. And especially on the low demand hardware that is the iPad, it just flies. It's silly, silly fast. And they've added Apple Pencil support. So that now if you wanted to get an Apple Pencil, you had to buy an iPad Pro. So my takeaway from the review was you're literally getting half the Pro for just about half the price. You don't get the smart connector. You don't get the fancy display. You don't get, you know, a bunch of the bells and whistles, the four speaker system, but you get a really good entry level tablet with a really good pencil experience. And Logitech is going to make a crayon for education that has the same pencil technology, just no pressure sensitivity for $50 and a very easy way for teachers to just throw them out there and not care who's pairing with which one. So
one complaint,
it's super interesting.
Or one thing, not a complaint, but one thing people mentioned is that because the screen isn't, what is it, laminated like the iPad?
It's not laminated. It's like the original iPad Air. And it bothers me a lot, but I gave it to like a bunch of my friends. I gave it to my godkids actually are in the video review talking about it. They don't notice. It drives me crazy, but they...
So like, that's so funny. You can see it.
It makes my eyes bleed. Well, no, like I can see it because I'm used to Wacom and I'm used to air gaps and I can see the difference in glare. But my mom for a long time went from an iPad 2 to an iPad Pro and back. And she was just like, whichever one is charged at the time.
Right.
And my godsons in that video, they're like, which one is iPad Pro? Oh, I know. Wait a minute. Is it this one? Is it that?
The resolution is the same, right?
The screen size is a bit smaller.
It's that there's... Can you see a gap between the glass and the screen or what?
It's a little bit more reflective. It's almost like the best analogy I can give is it's like old school cell animation where the paint is on the bottom of the glass rather than being inside the glass, which is what we're used to with laminated displays.
It doesn't do anything for me either. How about with the pencil? Some people have said that, well, you said that when you see video of the pencil, you're going to see more lag, even though that's not what you see in real person. In real life.
No, I mean, the pencil is the same pencil system as the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, and it feels about the same as drawing on the original iPad Pro. There is the air gap, which, you know, I used Wacom for years, and it had an air gap, and it didn't bother me until I started using the iPad Pro. And then I'm like, woohoo, no air gap, no ridicule, not all of these things. So I don't like it as much, but again, other people who aren't as fussy as me don't care. And it doesn't have a ProMotion display, so it doesn't ramp up to 120 hertz. So you don't get the absolute, like, close to zero latency. But it's still, it's as good as the iPad Pro was before last June.
Right.
Which is remarkable for a $329 tablet.
And most people wouldn't notice the difference, probably.
No. I mean, it kills me that they don't.
And
they don't.
One benefit, iFixit mentioned this, and Scooter X has reminded me in the chat room, that it does mean you can separate the digitizer from the display and fix... Yeah. One or the other, so it makes repair. It actually improves repairability.
Yeah,
not laminating them. You don't have to replace the whole thing at once. So, what did your nephews think about the overall experience? They seem to be very happy in this video.
They loved it. I mean, they have Chromebooks at school, and they were like, all of this is off the cuff. I didn't ask them to say anything. I told them to be as critical as they wanted, and they're like, oh my god, my Chromebooks are so slow, and this thing just flies. When I draw on a Chromebook, it takes like 3 seconds for the line. They exaggerate because they're kids. Like, it takes 10 seconds to boot up an app. It takes 3 seconds to draw a line. And they really liked it. And they loved the ability in iWork. Like, they just go, wait a minute, you don't just draw on it. You can draw like on top of your text and it stays anchored to your text. And they started making all these stories immediately.
I do like that feature. That's really kind of cool. And you didn't know you were missing it until you got it.
No.
And then you went, oh.
And it's like obvious in hindsight, right?
Yeah. I never even thought of it, but that's cool. It goes with the annotation goes with the text.
Who should buy
this iPad, this new iPad? Who is this for?
I mean, it's for people who've been waiting to upgrade from the iPad 2 or the iPad, you know, because that was a hugely popular tablet, the original iPad Airs. If you have an iPad Air 2, you might see the gap, the air gap. I don't know if it'll bother you. Not most people, it won't. If you've been really wanting an iPad Pro, like just to use Apple Pencil, but you didn't want to spend iPad Pro money, you get almost the same experience here for literally half the cash.
I think that for 90 to 95% of people who buy iPads, this is the right. This is the right one. There's a handful of people that want to push it a little harder, but I don't. I think that it's a very, very small number. This is really the right one for most people.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't had as long as Renee has, but during the half hour, 45 minutes, I had one in my hands during the event. I was not paying attention to whatever I was being told to do. I was trying. I was pinching and squeezing. I was swishing pictures all over the place. I was trying to get it to drop frames or in any way betray the fact that it is the least expensive computer that Apple makes. And none of that happened. It was a full. It was the full boat experience. I will wish that Apple still made really good iPad minis because I love that form factor. But it is tiny enough for any situation in which you just don't, you want a minimalist computer. I really think anybody who's been looking at a Chromebook and thinking that, gee, that's really attractive, it's a really nice computer, well built, good experience for just $300 or so, definitely should look at the iPad, because it's not just this hardware, and it's not just the ability to spend another $100 and get an Apple Pencil, although these are really big deals. It's the fact that iOS still has the most impressive library of productivity and professional software for it. One might even say that outside of like Adobe Cloud and Microsoft Cloud, it really is the only machine that has a really impressive library of third-party productivity apps for it.
It, of course, only comes with 32 gigs of storage. For a lot of people, that isn't going to be an issue. $429 if you want more storage. There's only two choices, which is 32 and 128 gigs. And then if you want cellular, add another $120 to that. So with cellular and 128 gigs of storage, you're talking $560.
Which and an Apple Pencil, you're talking $660.
Yeah. Yeah, and a smart keyboard. You're getting,
well, you can't get the smart keyboard. You have to get like a Bluetooth keyboard.
You have to get a Bluetooth. One. That's right.
Yeah. No smart connector.
Yeah. So, but I think you're right. I mean, if you get iPad Pro, it has the same kind of markup as you go higher up the line too. That for most people, what did you say? 80%, 90%? Most people, this is the right iPad, right?
Yeah. Whether you decide that you need at 560 or whatever it is, or the 329. Depending on what you think you need. I think that obviously the 329 is how low can we go to make sure that folks can get in.
32 gigs is enough for people who just want to run apps, right?
It's enough. My kids who play on their iPad would have been fine.
Yeah. I mean, you need more if you're going to put your music collection on it or you want to shoot and edit video.
Even not even so much anymore, because a lot of that stuff is now nearline, where they keep streaming the most frequently accessed and most recent stuff on the device, and they offload everything else to the cloud and then just sync it back and forth. So I think it's unless you really want to keep a bunch of stuff on there all the time, like download stuff to watch offline and do those kinds of things, you can eat it up. Actually, but I think for most kids, most casual users,
that's a really good point. Apple's been preparing for this low memory iPad for a while by having all of these optimization features and photos and so that you don't really have to worry so much about how much storage you have. And let's be honest, 32 gigs is actually a ton of storage. It's just not.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Apple's found that people either get the base model or they get the big model. They're not they don't really do the whole in between thing. I'm sure that's driven from experience on Apple.
Yeah, we don't make a 64 gig because there's no market for that.
Nobody bought it.
It's probably a very small percentage. I mean, I know I just get.
Isn't that funny? Because that 64 seems like the sweet spot. But you're right. I always buy the highest.
Right. So I think people some people buy either the littlest one that is cheapest, or they buy the most biggest one because they're going to use it all the time. But they don't really. I bet you the middle parts don't get used very often.
I'm actually wondering how much of the iPad Pro I have. When are we going to see a new iPad Pro?
That's this fall. At the earliest.
Not June.
No, it could be. It could be Dub. That's when they did it last year. But they don't do iPads every year. They do them between every year and every 18 months.
I think they did it the last 2 years in a row, didn't they? I mean, they did the 13-inch.
No, it was a long time.
I thought they did the 13-inch.
They did the 13-inch in September 2015, the 9.7-inch in spring of 2016. Both of them got updated in the summer of 2017. And now our next window is summer 2018 or fall 2018. So that's supposed to be the bigger redesign.
I don't know what I've got on here, but this is a 256 gig iPad Pro because, like you, I just whatever's the best.
Yeah.
And then I have 144 gigs free. So
I think once I hit 256, I have now not really had a lot of stress, about.
But I only have 300 songs on here, 300 videos. I don't know what's taking up all that space.
Pictures.
You know what? I find that
takes up mine.
Maybe.
For me, it's comics. The comicsology. Actually, just last week, when I couldn't put a movie I wanted to watch on a flight, I just decided I'm going to have to simply delete the comicsology app and reinstall it. And any comic or graphic novel that I can think of, I will reinstall. For me, 128 is the level at which, if I exceed that, then that's a lack of self-discipline and I'm willing to invest in it. But 32 is fine for if you're willing to manage things a little bit.
Yeah, I could have bought 128. I've only used 111 on this one. So
it's also difficult because they'll take advantage of space. So right. If they find there's free space on your device, they'll keep more of your photos locally and they'll keep more of your music locally and then ditch them again when you need space. So it's hard to measure what you have on there as what you can actually put on there now.
This I might have done just fine with 64, right? So Lightroom. Yeah, Lightroom has a bunch of 20 gigs of storage is used by Lightroom. Yeah. Audible, my Audible book's 16 gigs. Photos, 15 gigs. Yeah, and Netflix, 15 gigs. Yeah, but I wouldn't be using all that stuff. Certainly the photos would be offloaded.
And iMessage can be big if your friends keep sending you all sorts of animated GIFs.
My kids are obsessed. They get constant.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for the review, gentlemen. And I do hope we can see a new... What will a new iPad Pro... It'll have face recognition. It'll have...
Yeah.
Somewhat
A11 class processor,
faster processor.
Yeah.
I think it's time. I think it's time for a better camera too. Now that it's being looked at as an acquisition device, not just as a. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to do chat and take pictures of fruit?
I'm really.
Did they go to two cameras on it? That'd be interesting.
Like they do. Oh yeah. Why not? Why not make it as good as the iPhone 10? Why not?
That'd be interesting. I also wonder what if you really wanted to throw a bone to the camera team, what if you told them that there's a lot more space inside the iPad Pro. We will give you the space that you keep asking for the iPhones but never get. Really break our hearts with the best mobile camera, hands down, even beating the iPhone 10. I don't think that'll happen because people aren't clamoring for it and the price is high enough as it is. But I would love to see what the camera group could do with as much space as they wanted and as much battery as they wanted.
I think it'd be pretty amazing to see like a 2/3-inch chip but not changing the resolution. You'd suddenly have twice the photo size. That would be insane.
That'd be kind of like that add-on camera that you use.
Yeah, it'd be.
Given the size of the device, you'd also have room for one really wonderful separation for 3D scanning.
Yes.
So as opposed to kind of getting it right, just being able to capture stuff from the desktop, it's like I would love to be able to just randomly say I want a 3D model of this because I'm doing something professionally or just because I want it. Tip of the hat to Lucy Bellwood. I just got this is from a Kickstarter project that I'm so happy I paid for. But it would also allow people to just explore 3D modeling and VR and AR in ways that it's a stumbling block if they don't have the ability to create their own 3D models very easily and do capture.
Well, and I think that also even if you just set the distance so that it was the same as the interocular distance is the same as the human eye, you could take some great stereo pictures and
How much room is there in a 10.5-inch iPad? There seems like there's enough.
It's mostly speaker now, because you can't put too much lithium ion or you're not allowed flying or shipping it, and that's a big drag. So they put the big speaker system in there.
In other words, they got a lot of space in there. That'd be kind of cool.
Go for it.
Yeah,
go for it.
I'm so close to being able to just take. We're going to Japan for 2 weeks. I can almost take just my iPad. I would love to just take my iPad.
I think about it.
I think about it too.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah,
I want to.
Yeah,
because for me, a lot of it's security too. When I'm traveling, I feel much more secure with my iPad than it's easier to wipe off.
The only thing, and I really probably don't even, would be to bring. Well, there's two things, and one is completely, idiosyncratic, has nothing to do with any normal person. But I have a programming book I'm working on, and I'd like to have my programming language, which is not available on the iPad. Mm-hmm. So that's not. But it's photos, it's photography, and I could. I'm going to bring a Sony A9. I could easily use the Sony software to put the JPEGs of it. The RAWs would have to stay on my
There's a way to read that in, isn't there? You can read the RAWs.
But I think you don't. I mean, I guess I have enough storage. I probably could. Why not? Just copy them over. That main reason I do copy them over is more for backup than because I want to edit those images. I won't edit those till I get home. But with Lightroom, I could actually do a lot of triage on the iPad.
Yep.
Pick the pictures I want to save. Do some basic edits. Those get copied to the desktop. And then when I get the raw file on the desktop, those modifications would apply immediately to the raw file. So maybe, you know what, maybe should I be a guinea pig for this trip? And just
I don't know if I can do it. I think there'll be a lot of, Alex said to do this.
Then the next thing is not to bring my Sony at all, but take all the pictures with the iPad. I have the DX01.
No. What you do is you give the laptop and the camera to Lisa, and then she holds them.
Yeah. Tie me to the mast, Lisa. No matter what I say, don't give me the camera or the iPhone or the.
Well, actually, I take that back because you are not. If you do not get into an Instagram fight for good photos with Lisa, Lisa will
She'll
win. You may as well say, "Oh, all I have is this mobile device. I don't have the really lovely professional equipment that Lisa is armed with."
There, that gives me a good excuse.
Yeah.
But the only thing
I keep wanting to remind people is that phone cameras are really, really great. All these cameras are wonderful on Instagram. It's when you actually have them blown up on a screen that you can actually see people's eyes. You realize that, this real camera took a much better photo, even though it's just a $400 pocket camera. So think about that when you're attending the first viewing of your brand new grandchild. Maybe you do want to have a good camera.
The good news is you're going to Japan, which means that if you find that you needed that camera, Yodobashi camera is it the Chibu line?
You're tempting me now.
See, you can you'll find cameras there
that don't exist
here. You know, like you'll be like, that's amazing. You know, it takes a picture of me while I'm taking a picture of it, and it takes three other pictures from 4 feet away. You know,
I'm gonna bring a Pixel 2 XL, and I'll have an iPhone 10. Yeah,
it's just an opportunity to go research Akihabara.
That's a big leap. No, I think I don't know. I haven't decided yet. It felt good on when I went to the Caribbean. I did not bring a computer, and I didn't need anything more than the iPad Pro.
Right. Yeah. I have to admit, I think about, like, I plan a shoot if I'm taking my SLR now. 99% of the photos I take now are all my iPhone.
Have you noticed how fresh the air is in our studio these days?
It smells so nice.
I can smell it
even across the internet. Like early morning dew on a golf course.
We used to have a problem in here with paint smells. Remember the fires in Sonoma County? It was smoky in here. We could barely work in here. Now we have a molecule in here. I feel like, go ahead, tar the roof. Go ahead. We won't even notice it because we have the world's best air purifier. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier. For, the HEPA filter technology you probably think is a good air purifier was invented in the 40s. And there really hadn't been any improvements since then. It was just a filter. And it couldn't filter stuff. Too small, you wouldn't get any air through it. Molecule uses photoelectrochemical oxidation, or PECO, to go beyond the HEPA filter to capture and eliminate the tiny particles a HEPA filter doesn't even know about. Allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, even airborne chemicals like VOCs from paint, all of them, pollutants up to 1,000 times smaller than those a HEPA filter can catch. So we got it for a home because Lisa was getting headaches and stuffed up nose every morning. And we realized, we're living in the country. It's allergies. She has not had a headache. In fact, the one time we were out of town and her nephew stayed in our bedroom and turned off the molecule. The next day when we came home, she had a headache the next morning. She said, I don't know what's going on. Oh, the molecule's been off. That was a blind test that really proved it to me. Molecule makes it easier to cope with asthma and allergies, significantly reduces symptoms. Since then, we bought one for the studio and one for our Michael's room. One customer reportedly said after using Molecule, she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. And this is technology, the real technology, not some imagined. This is funded by the EPA, extensively tested, not only by real people like me and Lisa, but university laboratories like the University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense. the University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. This really works. Easy to use, has a clean, sleek design. Looks good. It's kind of the Apple of air purifiers, that aluminum unibody shell. And one of the things you can do, you don't have to, you can operate it from the top. It's got buttons. But if you pair it to your phone, you can operate it over the internet as well as at home from your phone via Wi-Fi. And one reason you might want to do that is because then you can get filters sent to you. It knows, and they send you filters when you need them, when it's starting to run low. We only have changed the filters once in about 8 months. So it's not a whole lot, but it's still nice to get that filter subscription service. You can connect Molecule to the Wi-Fi, control it remotely. You can turn off Bluetooth and Wi-Fi as well, so you get the choice. For $75 off your first order, go to MOLEKULE, Molecule with a K.com, and use our promo code MacBreak. Molecule, all I can say is it's worth it. It works. It really, really works to the point where if we don't have it on, we really notice it. MOLEKULE.com, Molecule, use the promo code MacBreak. Give yourself a treat. Get a molecule and breathe free.
You know what you should do, since you have such a great, great filtering system? You should allow employees to microwave fish in the staff microwave. I bet it could handle it.
You know what? Actually, that does remind me. I should get a molecule for my office because I am, for some reason, I guess my air system is next to the microwave. So no matter what is cooking in the kitchen, it's like they're pumping the air into my office. Not here.
Carson, I never is trying here. Tripe again.
All right, we got iOS 11.3. Okay, as far as I can tell, there's two things. I know there's more, but there's new Animoji. There's like four Animoji. New Animoji. There's a bear. There's a lion.
I missed.
There's a dragon, which is perfect for Chinese New Year. And there's a scary skull. But
if
I don't
you go
use
to my Instagram, you can see a preview of their picture.
I don't use the Animoji at all, so I don't. There's the dragon. I like the lion because the lion is me. So
in the jungle, the
lion sleeps tonight.
What they're also great for is that you can you don't have to do a bunch of talking stuff. You can just make really weird facial expressions and use those as responses to messages. Like if someone says something outlandish,
Try that.
I do that all the time. That's actually what I do. I do that more than anything else. So you just have to be careful of what the
background noise
background
is.
Background noise.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Because you're in the background now, so I gotta do it in silence. All right, so that's one new thing. The other one we've been expecting and waiting for and are glad to get, the new battery information. And this doesn't matter to me. I'm on a new iPhone, so it says my battery health is 100% perfect. Because it's relatively new. But if you have an older phone, it will now tell you what your maximum capacity is and for the first time give you a switch to disable that peak performance reducer.
It'll turn it off right away. As soon as you download 11.3, it'll turn off any performance throttling that's already been applied to your phone. It'll
really?
Give you a clean slate.
Oh, it turns it off immediately.
Turns it off, and then it'll only turn it back on if you have another unexpected shutdown, at which point you can manually turn it off again. You really shouldn't do that because it's like yanking an SD card out of your computer while it's reading and writing. I mean, most of the time, it won't do any problems. Sometimes you'll never be able to use that SD card again.
Right.
So like, it's just these things are not designed for unexpected shutdowns. So you shouldn't be turning it off, but you can. And it'll also tell you to go and have it serviced if you need it.
So by default, if you have had that slowdown turned on,
yeah,
iOS 11.3 will turn it off until you have one bad experience, and then it'll turn it on again.
Yeah. And then you can turn it off again, but it'll keep turning on every time you get an unexpected shutdown.
So the default is to have it turned off. I think that's actually a good response from Apple. So you're going to get maximum performance until such time as you show that you can't handle the performance.
I mean, it's a dangerous call because if your phone shuts down again, it could damage the memory on your phone and the content that you have on your phone. It could also leave you without a phone in a really bad situation. But when you don't give people the choice, they don't really like. They think you're just screwing them. You're just making their life painful for no reason.
Right.
So it's a tough call.
So those are two big things, but people are saying 11.3 is a big update. So what else?
I don't know. I don't consider it a big update. I think it's a typical spring update, and okay. The Animoji is like the headline feature because that's what gets people to download.
There is a new business,
a lot of little things behind the scenes.
Business chat, yep. And the iMessage. I haven't experienced it yet. This is for businesses to chat with you.
So you and it's anonymous. In the Apple tradition, it's encrypted and anonymous, and they don't give your information to the vendor. It's just a way for them to have a one-on-one conversation with you inside the app that you'd probably be using anyway.
So right now it works with Apple, Discover Cards, Hilton, The Home Depot, Lowe's, Marriott International, Newegg, TD Ameritrade, Wells Fargo, and 1-800-Flowers.
I do take that back, though, because ARKit 1.5 is in here, and that's a pretty big update because instead of just having horizontal surfaces, it now does vertical and non-standardized surfaces too. And they have some amazing apps, like apps that put museum like paintings on the wall, and you can go up and look at them and walk around them, and it understands all the vertical surfaces for the models. And that's, we got to see a couple of museum apps at the show, and those are really well done.
Good. Actually, one thing that the business chat does add, which I'm all for, is I hope more businesses will start using Apple Pay, because that is a great experience buying stuff online or on the phone. I really like that. So
the Wall Street Journal was horribly annoyed that you get a notification if you haven't set up Apple Pay that they thought you couldn't turn off. But if you see a notification, just tap on it and then hit cancel and it will go away.
And you'll never see it again.
No.
Okay. All right. And so what was the name of that painting app? Do you know that? Because I would like to try
the call offhand. It was a museum app. I'll have to look it up.
Okay, we'll find it. So I would like to see, you know, some of the new stuff.
It was great because it was a painting that had a lot of smaller paintings, and you could blow up the smaller paintings to look at the paintings within the paintings.
That's
and
cool.
Walk around and peer at it closer than any museum guard would allow you to do in real life.
You can sort reviews in the App Store by most helpful, most favorable, most critical, or most recent. That is a big help. Yeah. I do that on Amazon. That really is a good way to, you know, get rid of the junk reviews and find the best reviews. So that's good. ARKit 1.5, we mentioned that. iPad charge management. Hey, speaking of charges, where the hell's that pad they were going to release?
Yeah, awkward. it'll end up in a press release, you know, at some point when they're ready.
I think it got
too warm and kitty cats wound up sleeping on your nightstand on top of it.
I know when I installed iOS 11.3, I got and also the new Mac OS, I got this too, I think. The new privacy warning. And Megan, let me see if I can find Megan's tweet about this. She said it'd make a nice cake topper for anybody who is interested. It's a dark person shaking hands with a light person. But I think it's not race they're talking about. It's somebody whose privacy is, here it is. If you're getting married soon, says Megan, I encourage you to get a cake topper made of these two Apple privacy people.
I'm taking back what I said about not being a big update, because it also includes like the GDPR, which is the General Data Protection Regulation. The EU is coming out, and Apple is using that to sort of start pushing this stuff out in the EU first, because it kicks in May 25th. But it's going to go globally, and it's going to do things like, you'll be able to, like any Apple app will give you that icon and ask your permission before it uses any app for Apple's purposes. And then it will minimize any data collection. It'll give you transparent controls. It'll process on the device instead of in the cloud whenever possible. And it'll use encryption for everything that it possibly can. And they're going to give you some new services, like most of the services you could do already, but they were scattered around different places. So you can get a copy of any data that Apple has. You can request a correction to data if something is inaccurate. You can deactivate your account and you can delete your account. And it's all going to be super easy to get to. And they're going to update all of that on apple.com/privacy.
You know, this whole issue with privacy is really playing directly into Apple's
hands. It's so good for them. Tim Cook knows it too. When he was interviewed by Chris Hayes and Kara Swisher for a round table that they're going to have air on MSNBC April 6th. And when they asked him about the Facebook controversy and what Tim Cook would do if he were in Facebook's shoes, he said, "I wouldn't be in this situation," and the crowd goes crazy. So this is Apple's story. Plays right in Apple's story,
and not a story that's new. A story that they've had for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely the direct. You know, they're in the right place at the right time after 10 years.
Where like there was a conflation that companies were telling us that we were choosing to believe. That them providing deep personal knowledge of us was synonymous with them then using that knowledge to power advertising or marketing programs, and they're two separate things. You can, like, it's expensive to do, but you can acquire deeply personal data and use it just for the user and just on device if you have some other way to subsidize it. If you don't, then it becomes the advertising model, and that's sort of the disconnect. And Apple is saying, since we're not using advertising, we're just charging you nice margins on all the products you buy. We'll do this sort of stuff, and we won't also be using advertising or marketing on your data.
And I think Zuckerberg's point was good, that he said, well, you can't do that for, you know, if you want to make it available to everybody at all prices, you have to find other ways of monetizing it. And he, you know, and I don't know what the answer is to that. You know, how you make sure it's available to everyone.
Yeah. Also, although this, I agree with everything that Tim is saying there, I think that's a very strong card for Apple to play, and I think that they should continue to play it. Every time that Tim makes this sort of strong statements against Google and Facebook, I really want to ask the follow-up question, yeah, but you don't really seem to care about privacy and security for your users when they're users subject to a government that wants to use iPhones to keep them under the government's thumb a little bit tighter. I think that it continues to become more and more important that Tim throw into the mix, ideally when he's not actually speaking at a conference in China supported by the government, that he at least nods to the fact that there is a line that Apple will not cross, that they will, of course, they're forced to comply with local laws and regulations regarding the user content, what people can do with their phones. But nonetheless, if there is a line that they are not willing to cross with just any government, no matter how big the market is, I really, really, really need him to make a statement like that.
I have to say, Mark Zuckerberg was obviously a little needled by Tim Cook's statement, calling his criticism extremely glib. It's easy for you, Tim. You put yourself in my shoes.
I can't tell if that was smart or not, because on the smart side, it changes the topic of conversation and makes it about Apple as much as Facebook, and that might be a good distraction. But on the other side, he's busy doing the equivalent of the drunken druggy celebrity going on Oprah and being all contrite and crying, and it sort of ruins it when you turn around and start needling Apple. So I don't know if that was
And I think it's the true Mark coming out, but I also agree with his point. You know, there's that cliche that, you know, if that you're the product, right? Mm-hmm. What is it?
If you're not paying for it, you're the product.
He says, you know, I find that argument, if you're not paying, that somehow we don't care about you, to be extremely glib. This is Zuckerberg, and not at all aligned with the truth. And as you pointed out, if you want to build a service that connects everyone, then there are a lot of people who can't afford to pay. We don't charge for our podcasts. We sell advertising against the podcast. We don't collect information on you. Well, we do the yearly survey, but that's completely voluntary. But we can get away with that because we're a niche service. And by the virtue of content we put out, advertisers know who they're getting. They're getting tech enthusiasts, geeks. And if they want Mac enthusiasts, they advertise on Mac Break Weekly. If they want Windows enthusiasts, and so that works well for us. But not everybody can do that.
Choosy.
Facebook can't do that.
You're incredibly choosy about your advertisers, and you put your audience first, and the argument against Facebook.
Well, and we don't have automated advertising either, right?
Well, yeah. And the argument against Facebook is that they have often made decisions that were for the better of their bottom line and their advertising customers rather than their users.
Right.
Well, yeah. Every time I talk to Facebook, I am taken by the impression that I don't think they're evil, but they really don't think that the privacy of their users are important. If they believe that they're doing good with the work that they're doing in Facebook, they believe that by making it so easy for people to share information about themselves, they are uniting the planet, which is a very limited point of view. Whereas when I talk to Google engineers, no one is under any misconceptions that so much of the company's money is made through advertising, targeted advertising. But I also get the impression that, again, there's the line that they will not cross. They still believe that it's possible to have that business model without thinking of your users as sheep that in the best of times need to be sheared of their wool, in the worst of their times need to be slaughtered for meat.
He did a little sharp elbow to Apple. Zuckerberg quoted Jeff Bezos, an old saying. He said, there are companies that work hard to charge you more, a.k.a. Apple, and there are companies that work hard to charge you less. He says, it's important we don't all get Stockholm syndrome and let the companies that work hard to charge you more convince you that they actually care more about you, because that sounds ridiculous to me. That's a shot right at Apple.
Yeah,
and there was a good retort to that, though, where Amazon has a direct customer relationship the way Apple does, and Facebook, their direct customer relationship is not with the people who are using their app.
Right.
So they charging you less he's not charging you anything. You're not his customer. Well, that goes right back to the original argument.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And when I think the people, what people they underestimate with this whole process of what they get for free, whether it's Google or Facebook, the amount of money it takes to do what they do. Like when you think about the fact that you can upload a video to YouTube and millions of people are going to watch it. You're not going to pay. I used to have to pay for that per gig.
Yeah.
You know, we used to make things out of Flash, and I got really good at compression because I had to figure out a way to get
every
ounce, because I was paying all that money. And so the idea that you could put up a 4K image, a 4K video, and that's all done for free, you know, it's not free for everybody. I mean, it's not, someone's paying for that, you know, and that infrastructure that we get out of that, I think that when we have these conversations and we can theoretically talk about that, I think we underestimate the value that we are getting out of this relationship. You know, and I do think that we as personally need to be very careful about what we put online. You know, like I think that that's, you know, it's not.
There is, yeah, this, in every case, there never is any talk about what the responsibility of the user is. It's always the company's responsibility. And frankly, if you don't share this stuff with Facebook, it doesn't know it. I've just quit Facebook. That was my way of...
I don't quit Facebook, but that's
very true. But also, Facebook does a really good job of making it helping you not understand exactly what you're sharing. I think Google, it's there if you're looking for it. But even there, people have to learn that this is the nature of the transaction. That again, I do think that Google does it right, the best way that this sort of thing can be done. But even so, even if they're going to give people these great tools, people have to be educated that these tools exist and that there is a way to remove searches from their history and way to remove location tracking from their histories. So,
well, thanks to GDPR, every company is going to have a way to do that now. And I think really we should thank the EU for giving us a choice.
And, you know, and as I look at where I'm, you know, I'm already with my kids getting to the age where they're going to start posting things at some point. You know, I'm really in the
you
training.
Have to think about it.
I'm in the training process of, you are building from the day you make your first post, you are building a portfolio that people are going to look at, and they're not, and you're not going to, maybe you can erase it, maybe you should, but you're nuts to think that you can.
Furthermore, if you don't do that, somebody else will build that portfolio for you. So actually, I always tell teenagers this. You should be creating a portfolio. You should be creating an online persona,
right,
but make sure it's positive.
Right.
because if you don't, then it's really a problem. You have no reputation online. Somebody may make a reputation for you.
And when you're a freshman in high school, there should be a class that is an entire term that is going to teach you, you know, what you should be thinking about when you're talking about social. And it should be
more than ever a
required class of understanding, because you're setting your whole life up. Those pictures are not coming back. You know, like I know we can talk about it, but you know, there's no guarantee. You should not be sending the kind of pictures that teenagers send to each other.
GDPR, all that stuff. You've lost control of that stuff.
Yeah, it's never that's never going to be enough to protect you. You should be protecting yourself to some degree. You know, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be regulation. I'm just saying that as an individual, you should also, you know, I get that people are supposed to stop at the stop sign, but you still should look both ways before you cross the street.
Bingo. Let's take a break. Then your picks of the week, folks. Get ready. But right now, I'm going to pick some wine. I hope you're not listening to this too early in the day, because it's time for wine. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Where's the glasses? I don't understand.
We had glasses out on Twit yesterday.
I see how it is.
And it was funny because I had two teetotalers on the show with me, and Andy was remote. Thank you, by the way, for being on the Twit show on Sunday.
I loved it. Hope to get to do it more. It's nice to have a reason to be in on Sunday night.
It was great to have you on. And we talked a little bit about Wink. And if I could have shared some of this Wink with you, I would have, Andy, because I was drinking a Wink Pinot that was good.
It was you described it so well that, yes, I did crack out my bottle of port. And
oh, good.
Had myself a tipple afterwards.
Oh, good. Yes. I'm really happy to hear that. Yeah. Wink is... Well, I guess it's maybe it's short for Wine Club, I guess, WINC. It is a monthly wine shipment to you based on your taste. In fact, when you go right now to trywink.com/MacBreak, you'll go through the taste test. How do you like your coffee? Strong and black? How do you feel about salt? I don't need it, or I love it. Citrus, they ask you about umami, mushrooms, truffles. They ask you about berries. So they, and then peppers. They get a profile of your tastes. And then you get to build your first box. You can choose how many reds and how many whites. It could be all red, all white, or anything in between. And you get your first box of Wink wines. Now, Wink is a winemaker. This is very important. This is not leftovers from some other winemakers. Wink, in fact, I met Wink's winemaker, and I was so inspired. We had a little tasting down at the Wink headquarters a couple of weeks ago. This is my favorite one. This is the one we had. This is called Field Theory. Field Theory is one of their labels. And this one is a Blaufränkisch, which is a German-style wine. They also have a white Field Theory that's an Albarino, an Italian-style wine. These grapes, it says, curious varietals from unfamiliar places. These grapes are from Paso Robles, but they're picked at midnight. They're picked in the dark. They don't pick them in the daytime. They're hand-picked, destemmed, fermented whole berry, aged 8 months in neutral French oak. This is what my new favorite wine. But you don't have to do what I do. You might prefer a little white Sauvignon Blanc from Santa Barbara County. They have French wines. They have Argentinian wines. We had a wonderful Malbec there. They have beautiful labels, artist-designed labels. This is a really interesting company. Here's a Central Coast Pinot. I haven't tried this one, called Folly of the Beast. Don't you love that? One of the things you'll like about this is, so it's four bottles a month, which is just about right for like one or two meals a week maybe, or even a meal a week, and then a bottle to bring to friends. I would bring this to friends because it would be so fun. It's got the whale tail on it, Folly of the Beast. And the thing is, you can do that with confidence because even though these are affordable wines, they're always really, really good. People love Wink wines. In fact, as we get into warmer weather, the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé is a bestseller and one you absolutely have to try. Look at the Funk Zone. I love that label. This way, you get to introduce to new varietals, new styles. They work directly with winemakers and growers from all over the world to make all of their own wine. Again, they are a winemaker. No membership fees. You can skip any month. You can cancel any time. Shipping is covered. And by the way, there's really no obligation, because if you try something, you go, oh, this is not what I hoped for, I don't like it, they just send you another bottle of something you love. Do me a favor. Try the Field Theory, either the Albarino or the whatever that is, the Blancstampfschnauwana. It's really, really, really good. Why settle for the same bottle of wine you always get when you can discover new wines, great wines, today? Just try it, please. Do me a favor. Try wink.com/MacBreak. $20 off your first shipment. TRYWINC.com/MacBreak. You can buy wines there a la carte as well. And use the special URL there so you get that $20 off. Try Wink, TRYWINC.com/MacBreak. Breaking news? Oh, dear.
Yeah. Sad.
Possible shooting at YouTube headquarters. It's just coming in. Let me take a look at this. This is from, you've got this, you've got it in front of you, Alex.
This is, no one knows right now what's happening, but it looks like within the last couple of minutes, there's a lot of police action right now, right outside the YouTube headquarters.
Oh, golly. A possible active shooter reported at the San Bruno headquarters. That's not the main headquarters.
No, that is, for YouTube it is.
Oh, for YouTube it is. Yeah. Okay. All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. That's terrible. All we see is police activity. Let's hope it's a false alarm. All right, moving on. I'm going to do this one because if I don't do it, I know Alex will steal it. But I think Alex will want to know about this. There is a group of people called Wonder Unit. Have you ever heard of Wonder Unit?
I have not.
They they're creators. They make film, and they are offering a free storyboarding app for Mac, Windows, and Linux called Storyboarder, and it's free. There's no ads in it. There's no come on. They said, we developed it for ourselves, and we liked it so much, we thought we'd just make one for you. Now, it's more than just filmmakers. I mean, anybody who has to kind of plan a sequential story, you can print and import the paper. So if you draw on paper but you can't draw on an iPad, you can do that. You can export it to Premiere, Final Cut, Avid, PDF, or animated GIF. So it's really kind of completely open in terms of what it can output to.
If you build, I use storyboard apps a lot to build presentations. So
yes,
that's how I'm thinking through them and trying to figure out what I want to do. It's just way faster for me to sketch them all out. Then I take that and I open it up in Keynote, and then I actually build everything. And it's like 10 times faster than trying to think about it in Keynote. You get too caught up in like where this pixel is.
And if you're not a good drawer like I am, you can generate shots by typing female medium over the shoulder, and it will put in models that you can then change and customize. So you can actually do your own storyboarding by typing. I love this feature. It's called Sketch Sprint. They give you 20 minutes to do a sketch sprint. At the end of the sprint, they create an animated time-lapse GIF of your work. Isn't that awesome? And it's free. This blew me away when I saw it. I didn't even really get it. I kind of thought, what? How? Why? They answer the question in an interesting way. And there's some profanity here, which I won't say out loud, but if you're reading, just close your eyes if you don't like profanity. Storyboarder is niche software. The market is tiny. There's an inverse relationship between the market size and price we have to charge to make money. We're building this tool for ourselves to make better movies. We make money making movies, not making software. We believe creative software should be free. Let's be completely real. I've never known anyone working on dope-ass stuff to be paying for the software they use anyway. That's not true, but you pay for your software. Storyboard Pro, crappy software that costs $1,000. Boards, another online software that just allows you to order images and costs a monthly fee. F those guys. And then in little fine print, and I'm not really sure what the genesis of this is, and F Sony Pictures, they make the worst effing movies. What does that have to do with free software? Not much. Maybe use free software to make great movies and don't waste money going to a Sony movie. And then, for some reason, F Dave Morin and Gary Vaynerchuk. I guess if you give away really amazing software completely for free, you get to say things like that at the end.
I have a feeling that they are...
there's a story
bitter.
There.
They're bitter there. There's,
there's some bitterness. There's something. Wonder
they
Unit.
They probably make dark movies.
It's also open source on GitHub, which I even like more. So Wonder, I don't know why this is free. I mean, even if you don't do storyboarding, get it just for places to put ideas because it's free. WonderUnit.com/storyboard.
And if you want to see more, a lot of times when people make something for free like this, they're thinking about something better that's on the other end of this.
That they might.
So your job is to go download it for free because it tells them, hey, there's some, there's an interest.
There's a market.
There people want to do it. So if you're at all interested at
all.
I
noticed you just downloaded it and installed it. So that's nice. I'd be curious what you think. I mean, you know, probably your paid tool is better in some obscure way, but
I don't know. This looks pretty good. I mean,
I wouldn't buy a storyboarding program because I don't make movies.
I have to admit that I just wish it was on an iPad. Like,
I know this belongs
like
on an
when
iPad.
When I look at it, I thought when I first saw the interface, I was like, "Oh, this would be great on an iPad."
It's got drawing tools and all.
I know
that
it's
stuff.
Got drawing tools.
It's Windows, Mac, and Linux.
That's the only thing I'm bummed about.
What do you got so good, Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corp? What's your pick of the week?
I'm working on another video that's going to be kind of a follow-up to some of the stuff I've been doing.
I really like those video series. What's it called? Trash Talking?
The Teardown.
Oh, yeah.
What happened was I started doing the Teardown, and then people started asking me to do, well, how would you fix it? So I'm starting to work on that. And so I'm going to talk about green screen. And one of the things I wanted to challenge myself is, can I pull a good green screen with a iPhone? You know, like, you know, just shoot an iPhone with some relatively cheap equipment. And one of the things I knew that, well, I'm going to find out. I haven't done it yet.
That'd be cool.
I was starting to think through this process, and I was like, I really need to use Adam Wilt's Cinemeter because that's how I even up my green screens. And so I'm going to show how to use it in the future. But when I got back into it, I didn't have Cinemeter 2 loaded in, and I was like, this is great. So if you are if you're doing anything that you really need to understand what's in front of you, Cinemeter is a great way for you to actually measure what the camera's getting. And, you know, you can, a lot of it is when you're dealing with lighting or if you're dealing with a green screen, this is a key little operation that you can do. Now, of course, this isn't your camera, your actual camera that you're using. Although I do believe it actually can interface to some degree, but
now this looks like it has some hardware that goes on top of the phone.
No,
you can.
It'll use a Lux thing that goes on top.
That would be more accurate, right?
For certain light measurements.
I've always wondered how well a camera phone can do that kind of light metering.
Well, it's light metering for the phone. So if you're trying to set something up and you want to light meter how this phone is going to see that,
that's what you should use it for, not a separate camera.
Yeah, And okay. if you're trying to even up a green screen, you can use it because you can
right
because the it's not you're not really looking at the quality of the green screen at least at first. You're
you
looking
want
at
uniform
the
lighting.
Uniform lighting, which you can measure with a tool like this. And so I'm going to show how to do that in the next couple of weeks. I got NAB next
and if
week.
That, if that's what you're looking for, even if you weren't using a camera phone to shoot it. Uniform lighting is uniform lighting.
While you're setting it up, you could do it this way. I mean,
I'm trying to
challenge myself to doing it with this. But it's incredible that you can get scopes that are accurate and really well thought out. And I actually know, I mean, disclaimer, Adam Wilt's been an old friend of mine for 15 years. And he's probably one of the most brilliant video engineers I know. So it's not just made by some guy that kind of read a book.
It's got a false color picture, color metering, a waveform monitor. This is pretty sweet.
It's a really cool app. If you want some good technical information when you're prepping to shoot with your iPhone,
and Cinemeter, it's from adamwitt.com.
Yep. And just a reminder that we're finishing up our sale on the Pixel Core. So
is there anything left?
Oh yeah, there's more. We put more stuff up. We keep on adding stuff. So if you go to Pixel Core, if you go here and you sign up, I send out the emails to this list. I'm saying, hey, every week we're adding stuff. We added a bunch of new cameras and everything else.
So pixelcore.com/sale.
That's how you add into it.
To get,
and then I'll
on the mailing list.
And then on the mailing list, and then I'll email you out saying, hey, we put some new stuff up.
I bought a Sony EX3 from you. My son is out on his first shoot today. Thank you.
That's great. Absolutely.
I just joined the list.
You gave me a great deal too, by the way.
I know. I have.
Do you regret it now?
I got yelled at.
Really? No. I'll give you some more money.
It's fine. It was
Henry's really thrilled.
I got into a little trouble for that one.
Really?
But you know, we're trying to.
Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You've helped start my son in his career.
That's great. No, absolutely.
So I appreciate it. Andy and Akko, what do you got for us here?
One of my favorite apps in the world, not just photo app, but favorite apps in the world, Skylum Software's Noiseless CK. This is a standalone app for the Mac that will remove noise from photos. And we were talking earlier about how iPhones and other mobile devices take great pictures. But then when it's not on Instagram, you just put them on your screen, you see all the ISO noise and all the clutter and all the crap that this tiny little image sensor puts on there. This will just simply remove it, and it's damn near magical. You think that, oh well, it's going to make everything just too soft and remove all details. No, it is really good at figuring out what is ISO noise and what is actual picture data. And on top of that, unlike the denoise filters that you might have in whatever photo editor that you're using right now, it lets you really play with this with a high level granularity. So it'll analyze your image. It will suggest a method of – it'll suggest a level of denoise and let you preview it. And it's easy to sort of like A-B through the changes to see what's happening. But then if you say, no, I want this more aggressive, or I want you to use the – It's the easiest, least disruptive denoising is at the top of the list. And then by the time you get to the bottom, you can get the full, like, Real Housewives of LA effect, just erasing every single crease, every single detail, and make it look almost like a watercolor. But that won't be necessary. What I love about it is that it will take whatever camera you have and trick people into thinking you have a much better camera. I used it on the lighting inside the high school auditorium at the Apple event last week. Wasn't great because Apple could bring in the full rig of lighting that they usually bring. Also, my camera, I love it to death. But it's a micro four thirds camera, so it doesn't have that big sensor and the really, really good low light performance. And thirdly, I am now kind of paranoid about using like slow shutter speeds on any human being that is not sitting on a chair posing for me. So I have to, I feel like I have to use a hot even if someone is talking, if I want it to be absolutely tack sharp, I need a high shutter speed. But knowing that I had Noiseless CK on my MacBook back at the hotel, I didn't care. I just shot away. The shots I got out of the camera didn't look fine, but noisy, and the ones that came after just like 15 seconds of tweaking them with Noiseless looks like I brought a much, much better camera. Roller derby season starts on Saturday. I'm shooting my first match. Once again, high speed sports inside a hockey arena. I'd be dead trying to just shoot it with whatever I've got handy. But again, with noiseless, I can crank up the ISOs and know that I can basically make it look really, really good at the very, very end. And so normally it's $60. It's only it's on sale for $20 through the Skylum website, and can't recommend it highly enough, no matter what camera you have.
Skylum is the old Mac fun. They rebranded because they now do Windows as well as Mac stuff. And their stuff is really good. I haven't tried noiseless, but that price makes me want it now. Thank you, Andrew. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
Yeah, so I know like all the fancy console games are coming to iOS, but I wanted to shout out to a mobile game. And big surprise, it's Pokemon Go again, Leo.
I was hoping Fortnite or something, but no Pokemon Go.
It's super interesting. Like, we're going to see a spate of these games soon. Like, there's going to be the Harry Potter game, and there's anyone with a license.
Are they still planning that? Because I really want that Harry Potter game. That would, you know,
yeah,
like,
I think Warner is
going to
license
Beasts.
The technology, though. Yeah. So, like,
that
who knows?
So
but
fun.
What I like is this was originally a really good mobile game because it used everything. It used screen, it used data, it used GPS. You had to get out in the real world. It encouraged exercise. Like, it was just everything that made mobile unique was present in this game. But how do you continue that? Like, after you've caught a few Pokemon, you're bored. And they did updates. Like, they did a new gym system, and they did raids. And more recently, they did weather. So now when it's raining outside, it's raining in the game. And there's different characters and different powers and things that manifest. And the latest one is called Field Research. And now you're given, like, little quests. You have anytime you spin, you get a small quest, like catch 10 ground Pokemon or fight in a gym or do a raid or just a little task. But there's also, like, a story mode where this Professor Willow character wants you to find the mythical Pokemon Mew, who isn't in the game yet. And you're given all these different tasks in different areas of the game. And some of them are really easy, you know, like spin 5 Pokestops or catch 5 Pokemon. Some are really hard, like catch a Ditto, which disguises like other Pokemon. You got to catch tons of them just to find them, or evolve a Gyarados, or do 20. Like, they're all different, and you get rewards for doing each one. But at the end, you get a chance to catch this invisible mythical Pokemon. And It's interesting to see how this technology is evolving, because I expect nothing more than many, many clones of this game and games that are like this but go in all new directions. And you think they're going to have a short shelf life, but I'm enthused that Niantic is putting the effort into make new gameplay modes at least 2-4 times a year. So if you haven't tried it lately, there's a whole new game that you can play inside there now.
I'm going to have to pick it up again, I'm sorry to say.
Yes.
Hey, we have a visitor visiting from England. Craig is here. He's a member of the London Mac user group, and he says he's the first iPhone owner in the UK. Wow.
Nice.
Back in 2007? You must have been 8. And he brought me, I love this. This is the polo shirt from the London Mac user group, which has an Apple with the London Eye, Big Ben, and St. Paul's dome on it. And I love that. So, thank you so much, Craig. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for bringing this by. And cheers to the London Mac Users Group. That's awesome. You still have that original iPhone? So do I. I have mine. Just to give you an update, I'm watching a feed from TikTok, Bloomberg, of the situation at YouTube headquarters. It's sad to say, one of those pictures we've seen an awful lot lately, people leaving the headquarters and being searched by police to make sure they're not one of the shooters. We did see an ambulance speed off, so I'm going to guess there might have been some injuries, but we don't have any details about what's going on with the situation. Our hearts go out to everybody at YouTube in San Bruno, and stay safe. Stay safe. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays right after iOS Today, so you can make it a whole Apple fest if you want. We usually kick this show off around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. If you want to watch live, do it at our website, which is twit.tv/live. You can also chat with us at irc.twit.tv if you'd like to. And if you don't want to watch live, on-demand audio and video of this show is always available at twit.tv/MBW or wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, subscribe. That way you'll get an episode every time, every minute it's ready. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because break time is over.